So, a big thank you to Liz for reading with me for batches 1 to 4. Now we're in batch number 5 of local news and features, and I'm joined by the one and only Uta, and we have 4 stories. So we're going to do the headlines for you now. And my headlines are Royal Stoke pilots new safety net service for families to escalate concerns, and Clarius issues statement after worker tragically dies on site. And the stories coming up from Uta are...
Well, thank you, Tim, and a happy new year. Find out how the NHS is performing in Stoke-on-Trent. So I'm reading about the health system. And the second one is a new plan for tackling Stoke-on-Trent's mental health crisis.
Okay, so I'm going to kick off with the first story. And Royal Stoke pilots a new safety net service for families to escalate concerns. Royal Stoke is piloting a new call for concern service, which provides access to support from specialist nurses if a patient or relative is worried that their condition is getting worse. It's been launched to support Martha's Rule. Martha Mills died at a London hospital in 2021 after developing an illness. Her family's concerns about her deteriorating condition were not responded to, and a coroner ruled that Martha would probably have survived had she been moved to intensive care earlier. In response to this and other cases related to the management of deterioration, NHS England committed to implement Martha's Rule to ensure the vitally important concerns of the patient and those who know the patient best are listened to and acted upon. Royal Stoke is part of the pilot to introduce the service where all adult inpatients have access to a review from the critical care outreach team. The team comprises nurses specialising in the care of very unwell patients and patients recovering from critical illnesses. Anne Marie Morris, the UHNM Deputy Chief Medical Officer, said, "We are aware that patients, their relatives or carers are often the best people to identify the early signs of someone getting more unwell. This service aims to ensure that if there are ongoing concerns, a patient is getting worse after having spoken to the ward nurse or doctor, they're able to get support as quickly as possible from a specialist team. This system empowers them to escalate these concerns, allowing the outreach team to work alongside ward teams to provide the best possible care." She added, "We encourage all our patients to discuss concerns with their ward, nursing and medical teams, and we recognise the importance of listening to patients. This service is an additional safety net which offers a dedicated number for families to speak directly with the team should they notice any changes to the patient's condition that they're concerned about. By implementing a call for concern service, patients, relatives, carers and staff will receive 24/7 access to a dedicated team with specialised training in treating and recognising deteriorating patients. Over the next 12 months, the service will be expanded to cover paediatric, maternity, emergency department and outpatient services." So over to Uta, who's going to read her first story for us in Batch 5.
Well, we find out now how the NHS is performing in Stoke-on-Trent and the rest of England. Patients across England faced huge delays in major A&E departments in December as the NHS winter crisis continues to impact the nation's hospitals. Almost half of all arrivals at major type 1 A&E took more than 4 hours from arrival to admission, transfer or discharge, according to the latest NHS figures released this week. That's up from 43% in November, but is lower than the 45.3% in December 2023 and 50.4% in December 2022, the highest on record for any month. According to the latest data, University Hospitals of North Midlands NHS Trust, responsible for the Royal Stoke and County Hospital, was ranked 157th out of 188 trusts in England for waiting times. Things were particularly bad at Hull University Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust, where almost two-thirds, which is 64.3%, of all arrivals at Type 1 A&Es had to wait over 4 hours. At Worcestershire Acute Hospital NHS Trust, it was 63.7%, and at North Tees and Hartlepool NHS Foundation Trust, it was 62.4%. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of people had to spend more than half a day waiting for a bed. A total of 54,207 attendances at A&Es in December had to wait over 12 hours from decision to admit to admission. That's the third highest total on record and is up from 44,045 people in December 2023, but below the peak of 54,573 in December 2022. And a total of 1,894 arrivals at University Hospitals Birmingham NHS Foundation Trust had to wait over 12 hours, which is more than at any trust in England. More than half of arrivals at North Middlesex University Hospital NHS Trust had to wait over 12 hours, however, which is the highest proportion in the country. The NHS experienced one of its busiest Decembers on record, with a total of 2.35 million attending A&Es across England. More than half of those, 1.44 million, were at major Type 1 A&E departments, which are consultant-led 24-hour service with full resuscitation facilities and designated accommodation for the reception of accident and emergency patients. One area where things are improving, however, is with NHS waiting lists. Keir Starmer unveiled his plans to reduce waiting lists on Monday. His announcement comes as waiting lists fell for a third consecutive month in November, with 7.47 million now waiting to start treatment. That's 61,000 fewer than in October. The number on the waiting list for over a year also fell, with 221,889 now waiting for over 52 weeks. It means just 3% of those on the waiting list have been there for over a year, down from the post-COVID outbreak peak of 8.8% back in March 2021. Still, I think it's a high number. Professor Sir Stephen Powys, NHS National Medical Director, said, "It is clear that hospitals are under exceptional pressure at the start of this new year, with mammoth demand stemming from this ongoing cold weather snap and respiratory viruses like flu, all on the back of 2024 being the busiest year on record for A&E and ambulance teams. I never fail to be impressed by the remarkable job that NHS staff across a range of services in the face of current challenges, remaining compassionate, professional and doing everything they can to see patients as quickly as possible, while often working in hospitals that are full to bursting. It is hard to quantify just through the data how tough it is for frontline staff at the moment, with some staff working in A&E saying that their days at work feel like some of the days we had during the height of the pandemic. That hard work and resilience from staff alongside vital tools like surgical hubs and community diagnostic centres that keep planned care isolated from winter pressure meant the waiting list fell again in November to 7.48 million, with the NHS delivering 5% more activity than the same period pre-pandemic. Health and Social Care Secretary Wes Streeting said, "In the past 6 months, we have ended the junior doctor strike, so staff are on the front line, not the picket line, for the first winter in 3 years, and introduced the new RSV vaccine. But despite the best efforts of staff, patients are still receiving unacceptable standards of care." Well, although this winter's campaign vaccinated more people than last winter, this strain of flu has hit hard, putting more than three times as many patients into hospital compared to this time last year. It was an incredibly busy winter, and it continues, and hospitals clearly experience intense pressure. Please do continue to only use 999 and A&E in life-threatening emergencies and use NHS 111 and 111 online for other conditions, as well as using your local GP, if you can, and pharmacy services in the usual way. Annual winter pressure should not mean an annual winter crisis, which is why this government is making significant investment in the NHS, undertaking fundamental reform and acting now to improve social care. It will take time, but the fact that waiting lists are now falling shows that change is possible." Over to you, Timbo.
Brilliant, thank you for that. So my final story for us in batch five now is Clarius issues a statement after worker tragically dies on site. Manufacturer Clarius is offering support to employees after a worker went into cardiac arrest and died on site. An air ambulance was sent to a medical emergency at Brookhouse Industrial Estate in Cheadle on Monday, January the 6th, but despite the best efforts of company first aiders and paramedics, the worker was pronounced dead at the scene in New Haydon Road shortly before 3 p.m. Clarius, which makes exhausts, confirmed that all staff were sent home on the day and the company is supporting the deceased man's family. A spokesperson said on Monday, January the 6th, at approximately 2:45 p.m, a member of the team tragically suffered a cardiac arrest while on site at the premises in Cheadle. Despite the dedicated efforts of the first aiders and the responding ambulance crew, the gentleman sadly passed away. As a result, the site was closed and all staff were encouraged to head home. We're in contact with the family during this incredibly difficult time, and we are committed to providing them with all the support that they may need. Our deepest condolences go out to the family, friends and loved ones of the individual involved. We understand how difficult the situation has been for everybody. To support our employees who witnessed or were affected by the incident, we've offered them time off to help to process everything, and we remain fully committed to supporting them in any way we can. A West Midlands Ambulance Service spokesperson said we were called to a medical emergency at the premises at New Haydon Road, Cheadle, on the 6th of January, and two ambulances and the Midlands Air Ambulance from Cosford responded to the scene. Sadly, despite the best efforts of staff and ambulance personnel, the man was confirmed dead. So over to Uta, who's going to do the final story for us in batch five.
And the final story is about tackling the mental health crisis. Plans have been drawn up for tackling Stoke-on-Trent's growing mental health crisis. Mental well-being is the focus of a new annual report from Stoke-on-Trent's Director of Public Health, Stephen Gunter, with recommendations for individuals, communities and the City Council. Stoke-on-Trent has higher rates of mental illness or mental ill health than the country as a whole, a gap that has been widening over the last decade. Latest figures show that 18.6% of the city's residents had a diagnosis of depression in 2022-2023, compared to a national average of 13.3%. And between 2020 and 2022, there were 16 suicides per 100,000 residents in Stoke-on-Trent, compared to 10.3% per 100,000 across England. Mr. Gunter's report lists various factors behind Stoke-on-Trent's mental health problems, such as poor physical health, inadequate housing, high unemployment and increasing levels of debt. While the report does not look at mental health services, which are beyond its remit, it makes various recommendations for how people and organisations can make a difference in their communities. So Mr. Gunter told the City Council's Adult Social Care Scrutiny Committee that increasing individuals' awareness of their mental health, promoting healthy eating and physical activity, and organising things like group fitness classes and support networks would help boost Stoke-on-Trent's mental well-being. Well, he said, among the things that came out of last year's report were issues around mental well-being. This year's report looks at the broader mental well-being of the city and makes recommendations. These include things that individuals can do, things that communities can do, and also makes recommendations for the City Council. These recommendations around individuals are very much based on the five ways to well-being. Also, for the communities, it recommends to support and structure that work. So our mental well-being campaign will focus on broad messages. It's okay not to be okay. And then looking at specific communities where there is a greater prevalence of issues among young men, for example. I'm pleased to say we'll be working with the local football clubs on that as well. Councillor Lynn Watkins, Cabinet Member for Health and Wellbeing, added, understanding the health and well-being for our population is vital to ensure appropriate services and support are available so residents' needs are met. We've got lots of things going on in the city. We've got 19 community lounges now. We've got faith groups that are offering activities like lunches, and libraries are offering lots of activities. It is a crisis across the city. I think the director has shown that in his report. People are not feeling happy. They are not feeling supported. So the more we can get the message across, the better. The report recommends that the council works with its partners to sign up to the Prevention Concord at for Better Mental Health, which it says will strengthen partnership work and provide a holistic approach to positive mental well-being. Another recommendation calls on the council to tackle loneliness by promoting volunteering opportunities and befriending schemes. Councillor Chandra Kaniganti, who works as a GP, welcomed the focus on mental health but raised concerns over the long waiting lists currently faced by Stoke-on-Trent residents, such as those experienced by parent waiting for education, health and care plans. He said, "It is sad to see that we are more depressed, more anxious and we have higher rates of suicide. So thank you for making mental health priority for public health. There are such significant gaps in mental health services. Today I had a patient with ADHD who is not able to work. He's off sick, but he wants a diagnosis so he can get treatment. He got a letter saying he would be seen in 122 weeks. This doesn't make any sense at all." Mr. Gunter acknowledged the issue with waiting times, but suggested that improving community well-being provision could help relieve some of the pressure on clinical services.